Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome, Community Alert, folks. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. We've got a great program for you today, a very topical program about what happened in El Centro and Southern California during the earthquake that just happened recently. We have Battalion Chief Steve Wilson with us from El Centro Fire Department to talk to us about the things that he experienced there. And welcome, Chief. We're really glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Okay.
You sound tired.
You do sound tired, Chief.
Yeah, tired.
We'll get to Steve in just a minute. I've got a couple of announcements here. This is from the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. They have their Wildfire Community Preparedness Workshops coming up. For the first district, it'll be La Colina Junior High School in Santa Barbara. That'll be on April 24th between 9 and 11 a.m. For the second district, it'll be at the Wake Center in Goleta. That'll be on April 24th between 1 and 3. For the third district, that'll be Solvang City Hall, obviously in Solvang. That'll be on May 1st, 2010, between 9 and 11. For the fourth district, it'll be held at the Allen Hancock College on April 17th, between 1 and 3. And the fifth district at Blatchman School in Sisquoc on April 17th, between 9 and 11. For further information, give the fire department a call at 681-5500, and they'll have further information. All the agencies are actually participating in this, but Santa Barbara County Fire is the actual host. And that's all we have for news. So let's jump into what happened. We don't see much in the press about it. News Press ran an editorial recently by Terry Tyler on the earthquake that struck, but that's about the only local news I've really seen. But on Sunday, April 4th, at 2010, it was 3:40 in our time, 0340. 7.2 earthquake hit El Centro, Mexicali, right. Calexico, that area down there, and a lot of damage.
7.2 is a good-sized quake.
Yes. Yeah, so I reached out. I've talked to several people. We've got an article coming out on Saturday on A2. It'll be Shake, Rattle, and Roll. It has some details that will be coming out. But today I wanted to talk to Battalion Chief Steve Wilson with the El Centro Fire Department. Steve, welcome to the show. I know you're tired. You've been working this thing since Sunday, but to start off, what is a 7.2 earthquake like?
Well, let's say there hasn't been a whole lot of things in my career that have really scared me that much, but at the peak of this thing, I remember at one point thinking to myself, if this keeps getting any worse, we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it felt. I was at my house. I was the on-call chief at the time, and was home relaxing with my wife, and I wasn't relaxing. She had been doing the dishes at the time. It broke out. But I was standing at the sink, and at first I felt a real slow trembler, which is nothing unusual for Imperial Valley. We get a lot of those. But it just started building. It was like a crescendo. It just got stronger and stronger. At one point, it actually it felt like it just grabbed hold of everything and just shook it real hard with this real violent, quick shake that at that point I remember hearing that a lot of things crashing and breaking in my house. Like I said, I'd been doing the dishes and putting stuff out of the dishwasher into my cupboards, and they were open, unfortunately, and at that point just about everything out of those open cabinets came flying out and broke all over my tile floor.
Wow.
Which wasn't really good for me since I was barefoot at the time.
Oops.
It felt like it would start to drop off, and then it would just build again. It would hit us again, and then it would build a little bit more, and then it would just kind of stabilize a little bit, and then it would hit again, and it shook like that for about 65 seconds. They say it was I've heard conflicting news releases on that. Some people have said it was 45 seconds, but I would say in my estimate it was well over a minute that we shook.
It probably felt like half an hour by the time we got through with it. And your folks are right there on the San Andreas Fault, so it could have gone in a lot worse, I guess, couldn't it?
Well, actually, the San Andreas runs up on the north end of the Salton Sea. That's mm-hmm. where it kind of either ends or starts, depending on your viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple big faults down here. This was on the Laguna Salada Fault, which is one of the larger faults here in the Imperial Mexicali Valley area. The other large one that we're concerned with is the Imperial Fault, which runs about, I'd say about 5 miles east of El Centro, the end of our last eastern perimeter of our city.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1940, that produced a 7.4 earthquake, which at the time killed 3 people and had actual ground displacement of up to 15 feet in some areas.
Have you found any ground displacement?
There's especially down in Mexico, there were several as a matter of fact, there's some pictures out. Anybody that's ever been down to San Felipe, the road from Mexicali to San Felipe has a point where the escarpment where the ground actually rises up, it splits and it rises. There's an escarpment of probably 4.5 feet right across the middle of the roadway.
So that's probably shut off now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're washing the dishes, you're doing your chores, and a minute and a half later, your life has just changed. What was that like for you as a field supervisor? What happened?
Well, the first one was listening to the radio and all the traffic that started picking up, and I was in a personal predicament because, like I said, I was kind of trapped in my kitchen with broken glass all around, and I was barefoot, and I was trying to make sure my wife was okay. And once I found out, I said, just give me some shoes. And she was so flustered, she brought 2 different types of shoes, and they were both left feet. So I had to send her back, say, Rhonda, you got to give me a full pair of shoes here. So once she got those done, I basically grabbed my uniform, my stuff, radio, what I was going to need, and got ready and left, which I got to give my wife credit. Firefighters' wives put up with this all the time, but I know when I left the house was in complete disarray. Broken stuff all over, and she had no access out of the garage because although I had thought to secure all of our bookshelves and stuff inside the house, the contents which dumped out, unfortunately I hadn't gone that far and done the same thing in the garage, and my car was actually trapped inside the garage with about 3 or 4 different cabinets leaning over on top of it.
Good point.
So the lesson number one for today's show is strap your stuff down, your shelves,
yes,
the clocks, whatever.
Yes.
So, well, for the purpose of kind of background for the folks here in Santa Barbara, how big is El Centro and how large is the fire department? How quickly did this tax you guys?
It taxed us immediately. We are approximately around 45,000 in population, 12.25 square miles. The city of Calexico actually got hit because they're about 15 miles south of us, so they're closer to the epicenter. And they only had 8 people on duty.
Wow.
We immediately went into a second alarm mode, which recalls all of our off-duty personnel. So originally we had a two-man squad and a 2 3-man engine companies. One 3-man engine company and 1 4-man engine company on duty at the time that the incident hit. One of the other staff officers, he responded along with myself, even though he wasn't on call. He immediately, I heard him go in service. I requested him to go to what is our pre-designated emergency operations center. He took over the EOC operations, and I ran the field operations.
You did that with what, 12 people?
Yes. Initially, it was basically 12 people, well, 9 people. Well, counting myself, yeah, it'd be 11 to 12 people. Once we got all of our second alarm people back in, we were able to put in 5 engine companies and 1 squad into service. We do have a Quint. We considered it as an engine company as well, but that was also running. We were pretty well out of luck as far as mutual aid because Calexico was tapped out. Hopeville had their damage, and they were assessing their city and Brawley as well, even though Brawley got very minor type of damage over there. They still were not ready to release any resources until they had done a full assessment of their city and their needs there. So,
yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, Steve, but we're up to our first break here. This is Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Talking today, Battalion Chief Steve Wilson from the El Centro Fire Department, living the earthquake today as we speak. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back, folks. This is Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams, and my co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're speaking with Chief Steve Wilson. He's a battalion chief at El Centro Fire Department about the recent earthquake down there that they're still right in the middle of dealing with. And so, Mike, you've got something for us.
Well, I'd like to get the websites of the week out. The first one is cityofelcentro.org. That's cityofelcentro.org. And the second is Calexico.ca.gov. That's Calexico.ca.gov. Those will also be available at the WRA website with the copy of this show here shortly, but encourage people to go to those websites. But let's jump back into talking to Steve. Steve, when you did your initial assessment around the town, what was the primary damage and what started going through your head?
What was going through my head was that we needed to get people out. We needed to handle the accident circumstances that were taking place. Mostly it was calls for gas leaks. I kept looking to see if we had, most of the city lost power almost immediately. I would say three-fourths of the city was without power. I know both of our stations, the police station, were all running on emergency power at the time. Hospital also went on emergency power immediately, and so we had a lot of power down, a lot of damage with the electrical infrastructure that was a concern for, you know, you get sparking and you get gas leaks, so it doesn't make for a good combination, and so that was probably the first big one we had was a medical aid. They had a minor accident because all the traffic lights went out, and so we had that, and while the guys were there finding out that nobody was injured at the accident, there was a call just down the street, and one of the only major injuries in El Centro was a gentleman who was walking down the street with his daughter, and a sign on a local business broke loose from its poles, fell about 20 feet, and struck him in the head and the back.
Oh boy.
And caused major head and spinal injuries to him. And well, so that was our first big incident for our personnel having to deal with.
Well, you lucked out, didn't you? Because this happened at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, Easter, no less. This happen at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a work day?
Oh, we've all said that. If it was going to hit, it couldn't have picked a better place. Churches were ahead, let out by that time. Most of the local businesses, except for some of the larger box stores, were closed. And, of course, everything was out. Schools were out because of Easter break. A lot of people were out of town. As a matter of fact, there was only two of the chief officers to handle this because all the rest of them were out of town. Our fire chief was in Colorado, and two of our other chief officers were out on vacation as well.
So. How much structural damage did you see there? I mean, as far as buildings being demolished, was there a great deal of that?
We did not have any full collapses in El Centro. Now, down at Calexico, they did have to deal with some partial collapses, and mm-hmm. I know in Mexicali they also had problems in Mexicali and the areas south of and surrounding Mexicali. They had quite a few, not only commercial buildings, but residential structures that had collapsed, and they had issues down there.
Have you guys done a lot of earthquake preparation drilling in your area? I mean, how did that affect what happened? Have you got anything you can give us on that?
Well, one of our big successes is we have a golf course that has it's a small little 9-hole golf course with a trailer park around it. A lot of snowbirds that come in. It's got the park models and a lot of the double wides. A lot of retirees have left out there. But we've done work with them. Their management's really good. We've gone in and done preparedness type of classes for them. They've got a kind of like a little team. They work real well together. When our engine ran in there for damage assessment, Les, who is the manager, met him at the gate and said, "We got it all taken care of. All the gas is shut off. No, we took care of all our gas leaks. We've got our power shut off to those trailers that pulled loose from the connections. We have no problem. We took care of everything." So,
wow.
It was great because they had almost, including their smaller park models, they had almost 60 trailers that had come loose and either shaken completely off their foundation or had been shaken free of them and slightly listing.
Do you have CERT teams down there, the Community Emergency Response Team situation?
We do have in some of the cities. We've only started the train-the-trainer program in El Centro. Mm-hmm. We hadn't actually done it. I know years ago we tried, before CERT came out, I tried to do what I called the NERTS, which was Neighborhood Emergency Response Teams.
Mm-hmm.
The downside to that was you had to depend on each person in each neighborhood to have to keep going with it.
Right.
The nice thing about CERT is you pull from the entire community. So I think that is a better program. However, we hadn't fully initiated it in El Centro. Hopeville is the only, which is a smaller, they got a grant and they were one of the first cities to try it out. And from what I understand from their fire chief over there, that it worked really well for them.
Well, I imagine you folks will be doing a bit more of it now that something is, you've got the community's interest now. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot more.
Right now, yes.
I'm curious, this is kind of for all our listeners that are in the fire and the police services. Now that you've been through a 7.2, and looking back on ICS training and management and all the incident trainings that we all collectively go to, do you think that adequately prepared you for what really happened?
Well, we did have an issue with ours because one of the things that you have to do for preparedness is if you're going to have a designated EOC, you have to make sure your resources are there and everything's set up. We had a pre-designated EOC. It was at the police station. The problem we had was the EOC is the area in which it is. It doesn't have any outside windows to it. It's on an interior corridor. And it went dark because the emergency generator, nobody thought to hook that circuit up to the emergency generator circuit. It primarily just keeps dispatch and a few other offices running, but the EOC was not hooked to it. So we immediately had to back up and punt, so to speak, and kind of ad-lib their way through. Everybody, instead of working off of the ICS forms that were up there, they just had to grab yellow pads, and instead of the pre-designated phone numbers that we had, everybody had to work off of cell phones, which, thank God, we only lost cell service for just momentarily. It was back up and running probably within 5 minutes of the...
That's great.
Well, that's good. So you were able to keep your communication, and I did the infrastructure for police and fire communication stand up?
Yes, it did real well. We have the new 800 megahertz system, and it worked very well.
Oh, excellent. So we're up to our next break here. We're getting the high sign here from the ever-diligent Richard Dugan. This is Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. Visiting today with Battalion Chief Steve Wilson, El Centro City Fire Department, talking about the 7.2 earthquake that hit them on Easter Sunday. The website for them is www.cityofelcentro.org. Look them up. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the Internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, folks, and welcome back. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. This is Community Alert, not if but when disaster strikes, and we're speaking to someone that's well aware of disaster. Just this last weekend, Battalion Chief Steve Wilson from El Centro Fire Department went through a disaster 7.2 earthquake in his area, and we're querying him today about some of his experience there. And, Mike, I know you got some stuff.
Well, during the break, Steve pointed out that Imperial County is the lead agency on this, and he's encouraging folks to go to their website. It's imperialcounty.org or .gov. We're not sure which, but it's Imperial County. And we encourage people to take a look at that because, like I said, they are the lead agency. They're running the Emergency Operations Center, and it's important that we direct people to the right places here. But, you know, Steve, you've brought up some good points because the primary reason we wanted to talk to you about what was happening in El Centro is what happens if it happens in Santa Barbara.
Obviously.
And as you talk about the EOC, that's been a hot topic here in Santa Barbara. The Santa Barbara City runs out of the briefing room at the police department, which is not actually an EOC set up. It's something they got to set up, which is exactly what you are taking. And then the Santa Barbara County is in the process of building a new EOC to eliminate these very problems that you're just talking about. How much did that hinder your operations in the first several hours in that suddenly you've got to set something up that's critical to your infrastructure?
It hindered the organizational portion of the EOC, although we ran it on a shoestring, actually. Communications-wise, because the cell towers did not go down, it was it didn't hinder it as much. If we would have lost the cell towers, it could have been a lot worse. Or if we would have lost our 800s, it would have been a lot worse. But we're in the process, I guess, similar to what they are. We realize that it's a shortcoming on our part, and currently they're building a senior citizens center. And when we discussed this with our city planners, we came up with the idea that we've got dedicated area over there that we are going to store all our stuff and be able to move it straight out. Have an emergency generator that'll supply the entire building with power, and so we had plans for it, but we just hadn't reached that point yet. So
with the telephones, the cell phone traffic, you didn't have a congested cell problem with the public using their cell phones too much. That worked out fine. There was plenty of bandwidth there, or whatever.
That's. As far as I know, I'd have to defer to my peer, Chief Burns.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that was in there. I was pretty well. I was working. I had two radios going inside my staff car and a cell phone. There were a couple times where it would seem to cut out on us, but it'd come right back up.
That's great.
Steve, a question here for the public to think about. You're the chief officer. You've just sustained a 7.2 earthquake. You've worked your way out of your own house. You found the correct shoes. You're in your car. How did you start setting your priorities? You've got a big town down there. It's a big jurisdiction. A lot of things are happening. How did you pick your priorities?
Well, the captain said our priorities as part of our SOPs is the first thing we do is we get all our apparatus out of the station and do a status check on our own personnel to make sure that they were all safe, no injuries. And I heard the captains report their status checks and knew that that the stations had survived, that we didn't have any major damage that would have inhibited the engines to be put into service, and that our personnel were all good. And then we basically, until we got the EOC established where we could start prioritizing calls, our dispatchers just throw them out there as could be, and I would have to pick a unit that I knew was available, and there were a couple times where we had to just prioritize. Water leaks were not as high a priority as gas leaks, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Medical aid calls were handled as a priority unless it came in as somebody hyperventilating or having anxiety attack. We had quite a few calls for 911 because somebody's mother was having an anxiety attack, and I think the truth of the matter is probably most people were having some high level of anxiety after that.
Sure they were.
I know I was.
How about the situation with like bridges and some of the traffic infrastructures? Did you have any problem with getting around, or was everything pretty open and safe?
That was kind of as we got there. Like I said, our resources initially, we could not go out and really do assessment. We were handling calls. We handled mm-hmm. the first 12 hours with our resources, we handled 120 calls for service, which kept us quite busy. Immediately, if they came across anything that was a problem, it was put out and to the EOC so that we would know. There was only one call for service where we crossed over the 8th Street overpass that goes across Interstate 8. And as they went over there, I remember hearing the captain saying, "We're going over I-8 overpass. We'll be inspecting as we go." They said that there was no obvious sign of damage at that point, and they went over. That's not the way we would like to do it. It'd been nice mm-hmm. to have somebody go look at it first before right. we put an engine on it.
Yeah,
but at the time, we just didn't have the resources to do that. Uh-huh. Now,
sure, you got to go with what you have.
Well, I know that within the first hour and a half or so, there was a section of Interstate 8 westbound lanes that were shut down completely, and CHPA responded to and had to set up a detour on the interstate. There were county roads throughout the Imperial County that where they have we have the New River down here, which flows out of Mexico and into the Salton Sea, and there's a couple points where county roads go over bridges, and I there's some pretty severe damage on the one that on Drew Road where the bridge goes over that. The bridge itself shifted probably about a foot to two
wow.
feet to the
wow.
to the north.
Well, for some background here for folks, there's reported over $100 million worth of damage in El Central, Holtville, Imperial, and Calexico. Mexican authorities are reporting over 25,000 people are now homeless in the area of Mexicali, with extensive damage still to be tallied up in and around the surrounding area. For Calexico and El Central, over 800 homes have been severely damaged. There's over $15 million of damage sustained in three schools at Calexico, $20 million estimated in local government damage. And there's over 5,200 homes damaged in and around the area. So we're talking about some pretty staggering figures here, not to mention, let's see, we got 200 families displaced in and around your area, and you've got a 27.2% unemployment rate as of February. You've got some problems down there.
Oh, yes. That's what we were meeting in the EOC today with members of the SBA, Small Business Administration, and FEMA has two reps down here, and are evaluating our situation. That's one of the things that's real problematic for us, because a lot of our disenfranchised lower population lives in some of our trailer parks that are on the north side of our town, and we had quite a few of those that are basically sitting on the ground that came off their piers and are and have damage. They're not able to be occupied at this time. And these people just don't have the means to be able to have a contractor come out and put it back to code. So we're going through right now the recovery phase, although Calexico still is somewhat in a response phase, because they keep having, with some of our stronger aftershocks, they've had a few buildings that have either fully partially collapsed or have increased the level of damage on them in their downtown area. So,
all right. Well, hold that thought. We're up to our next break here. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Cold Spring Tavern. Give them a call for reservations, 967-0066. Service Masters anytime in Santa Barbara, 688-2399.
California State Firefighters Association, Fire Services Training Institute, co-sponsors of Community Alert, as is the Fire Safe Council for Santa Barbara County. Paul Cashman, State Farm Insurance, give him a call, 687-6666. Green Building America, they're at 888-338-8911. I guess I could read that better, 888-338-8911. And finally, the Montecito Fire Protection District and the Montecito Emergency Response Recovery Action Group, probably taking good notes here today because this is exactly what they're here for. Give them a call at 969-2537. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board for us. We're visiting today with Battalion Chief Steve Wilson, El Central Fire Department. Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Now, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, Positive Preparation for Disaster. And we're talking today with Steve Wilson, who's a battalion chief at El Central Fire Department and has just lived through a disaster that we're picking his brain about. And, Mike.
Well, let's talk about the Government Emergency Telecommunications Service. We were talking about this during the breaks. How did that help you out during this event?
As far as I know, we did not need to utilize it, but it was an option that we had prepared for in case, like you had asked, if the circuits had gotten overloaded. And basically what the GETS card, as we call it, what it does for us is if it gives us a way to call into a specific number that gives us priority and to utilize our and prioritize any of our calls over anything else that's come in from the public. That way, if we had people working in the EOC needing to either use hardline or cell phone, they could have priority calls over the public.
Well, I would encourage those listening from agencies that don't have one of these cards, we do, I got mine right here, to go to the website www.ncs.gov, ncs.gov.
Right.
These guys actually have their act together, and not everyone qualifies for one of these cards, but if you have the card, you got the super secret numbers, you can seize the cell sites for emergency use.
Right.
It's free.
There's no charge for them.
Did you know, Mike, Steve probably knows, I'm not sure if you knew, but that you can text when the systems go down on your cell phone. You can use your text even if the voice system doesn't work, the text system does, and I think a lot of people don't realize that, so that's something that is very handy if you have
actually a separate system, and now they got G3 coming, which is actually a separate one from that, but it's all programmed in, and I just saw some FCC legislation coming down that they're trying to mandate that cell phones be able to receive TV signals. So the cell phone's going to become quite a device here over the next few years. I don't know how much junk you're going to be able to stuff into that little box, but your life is...
How much TV
you know, remember the old Star Trek communicators are actually starting to become real. So,
yeah.
Steve, what kind of advice would you pass on to the folks listening today about things that worked and suggestions other than bolting down your shelves and your water heaters that you've seen as you've done damage assessments?
Teaching people how to shut off their own gas. Let me make the announcement for the gas company. In an earthquake like that, they don't want you shutting off your gas unless, of course, you smell gas or you can hear gas leaking, because then they have the problem during the recovery of having to go out and turn those all back on and check all of your appliances to make sure everything's operating properly. But for those people that had gas leaks, it would have saved us quite a few calls if those people just had the ability and the knowledge to go over to their meter and shut that meter.
Well, that's good to know. How did the gas lines hold up in relationship to the water lines? Because I know you've had a lot of water infrastructure problems.
It depended on the age of the houses. Now, our biggest problem we had was we had one older house that was on a stem wall foundation that had not been secured and upgraded, and it came completely off. It shifted probably 2 feet to the west and about a foot and a half to the south, and actually crushed the gas meter. It was sitting on top of the meter, which limited that we had no access to be able to get to the feed pipe to be able to plug it off. And we had to evacuate about a half a city block around it to wait for the gas company to get out there. And
well, that was a lot of commitment of manpower and resources when you needed that.
Had tied up one whole engine company for almost actually, once we got PD, the police department surprisingly had no calls for any kind of looting. And as a matter of fact, the calls for service for the police during that period of time actually went down. So we had, at one point, we had to make the decision to leave the police at the end of the blocks and just seal off that block and have that engine company actually leave the scene so they could handle other emergencies. And I know normally, under normal situations, if you have an actively leaking gas meter in and around a structure, you do not do that because there's a chance of fire breaking out. But in this particular case, there were that particular engine company handled about another 15 calls within about an hour and a half that we waited for the gas company to get out there to actually shut off. If there was any shortcoming, it was the fact that the gas company did not, they had their own issues, and they were not able to respond as quickly as we normally have them coming out during
That's good advice. Keep a wrench at your gas meter and at your water shut off, and be able to turn that off yourself. And that doesn't cost any money to learn how to do.
One of the things I'd like to cover here, though, for the audience is that if you shut your gas off, you do not want to turn it back on again after.
That's correct.
Because you want to make sure that the gas company is there, because during aftershocks and that sort of thing, something might rupture and you turn it back on again, have a problem, and you want to make sure the gas company is able to check you out before.
How long was it before you started receiving your mutual aid?
We got no mutual aid. That was, we were all just our own second alarm.
So you own this incident?
We own this one. Calexico was pretty much on their own. Now, Calexico did get, Calexico Fire runs an ambulance service. We run medics on our, we have medic assessment engines and squad, but we do not do transport. They actually have a transport and are responsible for transport in city of El Centro, or of Calexico. And so they did receive mutual aid from the private ambulance company to assist them in the increase of their medical aid call volume.
So how many folks do you have within the fire department that are in the operations side?
In the operations
center? Yeah, your total, well, no, just the size of the fire department itself. It sounds to me like you guys have been awfully busy.
Oh, we have. Well, actually, El Centro's pretty well back. We're in the recovery phase right now. So now everything is just like building officials. We're assisting them with damage assessment. But as far as mitigating hazards, except for the other day, we had a wall that started leaning real bad in a aftershock, and our guys went down there and did some of their heavy rescue tricks with pulleys and ropes, and dropped the wall back in towards the yard instead of allowing it to fall on a packed bell box. We didn't want to disrupt communication. So
no, absolutely not.
But basically, we haven't had any more responses since probably late Monday night. As far as, well, with the exception of the wall that we had to pull down.
If you had to do it over, what would you do different?
I would have probably quadded off the city. Once the thing started slowing down a little bit, we took the four engine companies. We gave each one of them a fourth of the city, kind of cut the city into four pieces, quadrant one, two, three, and four. Assigned them to there so that they weren't running back and forth across the city for calls. And then we took a fifth engine company, placed it at station one along with the squad as the backup to each one of those. That worked a little bit better. Initially, as units were coming in, it's not like everybody came in all at once. and that we had all of our reserve engines put in service all at once. They just kind of got, one would show up. I think our first reserve got put into service about 35 to 40 minutes after the initial quake, and then we got another one in about an hour and 15 minutes after the initial. So if I could have done it, I probably would have tried to break that off and use that strategy a little bit earlier than later.
Well, that's one of the advantages of your city requires that the employees live in and around the city, doesn't it?
No.
Oh, okay.
We used to, and if for small cities that are dependent upon that, I would say that's probably a good tactic. But we had a chief that came in and let people move wherever they wanted to.
Did that hamper you at all in reality when you had an event like this?
Not really. Most of those people who had stayed outside of the area have left and sought employment in other places.
Oh, okay. So that...
we have three employees that live over either in Brawley or north of Brawley, which is about a 15-minute drive, mm-hmm. or 15-mile drive. One of them was in back over here assisting us prior to even some of the guys that live in town. And then the other issue is that we, as part of our plan, to try to get people to come in and be comfortable providing service and not hanging around their house taking care of issues. As soon as we're feasibly possible, we allow the engine companies to, even if they have to leave their district for a short period of time, to take and go check on family members. And if those that they can't check on because they're running calls, I know as the battalion chief, as soon as I had time, I would have captains call me and go, can you go check on firefighter X's? He hasn't heard from his wife, and he's not sure if she's okay yet. And so that was one of my duties as well. With everything else, was running to check on family members and make sure that they were fine and they were able to get a hold of them. Again, with the advent of cell phones, this was another time where normally we do not allow our guys to carry their cell phones on a day-to-day while they're on duty because of, the issue of just employees using phones at inappropriate times. But because it was a disaster situation, we lifted that and allowed the guys to have their own phones with them. And that helped a lot because they were able to make contact with family members, keeping track of what was going on. And most of them, I would say most of them were very responsible in how they handled it and would just call and go, hey, you okay? Yeah, you are okay, fine. And that was it. There weren't any that needed to sit and take up a lot of time on the phone, on a cell phone while they were supposed to be handling emergencies.
Well, very good. We need to take an interruption here. Getting a high sign from Richard. This is Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Visiting today with Battalion Chief Steve Wilson, El Centro Fire Department. On KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back after these quick announcements.
Yeah, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. We're visiting today with Steve Wilson, who is a battalion chief at El Centro Fire Department. He just experienced a 7.2 earthquake in his neighborhood. Mike.
Well, Chief, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us today. We've got a minute and a half here. Just now 1 minute. Any closing thoughts or comments?
Yeah, one of the things for your public, one of the things I'd really like to press is that in times like this, the American Red Cross is there. They've been here in the EOC the entire time. They've been setting up sheltering and feeding displaced people. They depend on donations from the public, and someone who's worked with them most of my career, they do excellent work. They're very professional on how they do it, and I think they deserve ours in the public support. And so if you've got a little that you can give and you're looking for a good tax write-off, with tax season coming up, make that donation to the American Red Cross.
Well, the Red Cross is a huge supporter of Community Alert. You can make those donations here locally. Give them a call at 687-1331, 687-1331. Thank you very much, Chief, for being with us. We're out of time. We'll be back with you next week. This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and newspress.com. The news is next.
Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department. In association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council, Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.